People can be asked the wrong question with care and be okay.
Welcome to Popaganda. I'm Shannon Perez-Darby with Tejmika Torak. Season 2 of Popaganda will be launching in April. While you're waiting, we wanted to give you a little bit of what we're watching, paying attention to in the transformative justice and pop culture world. As you're settling in to listen, we want to share a content note that this episode discusses child sexual abuse. If that's a conversation that's not right for you today, we encourage you to take good care of yourself, and we'll see you in our next episode. Great Photo, Lovely Life is an HBO Max documentary. It follows Amanda Mustard, who is a photojournalist. She talks a lot about her drive as a photojournalist towards bringing things into the light, to making things known, to making things right-sized, and that is a big part of her drive. And so she takes that skill she has built as a photojournalist and she turns it towards her family and towards this experience of what she described as her touchy-feely grandfather, who she had always sort of heard stories about him being creepy, him being inappropriate.
And I would just like to say really quickly that everyone needs to pay attention to those stories. Please stop having creepy, vague stories in your family about the uncle or the grandpa. Like, if there's a story, there's a story for a reason.
I love that I get to make exposing the truth about something a part of my job.
I had this new language to describe things that for my whole life I thought were just normal. Like the way that some men treated me and my body, that was actually assault. Or my touchy-feely grandpa is actually a pedophile.
When I watch these tapes, I see a man with a serious problem who knows that he's not going to get caught.
Was there anybody that you ever felt like you could talk to about it? Do you feel like God has forgiven you?
Absolutely.
It's hard to forgive someone who doesn't ask for forgiveness.
She tells stories about her creepy, touchy-feely grandfather, who then turns out to be a person who has sexually abused many, many children. In the course of this docuseries, she turns and faces that. I do want to pause here to say that of any trigger warnings I give, I would give this my highest trigger warning. If you want to watch the docuseries, I think it's important to know that they talk in pretty high levels of detail about the kinds of sexual violence that he perpetrates. I would highly recommend folks think for themselves about whether they are in the place that is right for them. And if you do find that is content that is right for you to watch, I think there's a lot of complex, beautiful things in this docuseries. So Amanda brings her mother into the docuseries. So we see a lot in the beginning that her and her mother, they go and they visit her grandfather and they start doing interviews with him. And pretty right away, those interviews are asking him about a particular instance that is well known about abuse that he perpetrated. He immediately starts saying things like they were in a relationship with, I believe the girl was 9. She was very, very young. It happened over many years, but I think she was 9 when the abuse first started. So he's saying things like, no, she loved it. We were in a relationship. You know, you don't have all the context in the moment. There's so many complex things that happen. Some of the things I want to talk about are particularly the piece of what it is to uncover your family secrets and what it is to turn towards that. And as the docuseries goes on, it gets more and more complex. So there's this, what I sometimes think we think of as simplicity of saying, okay, well, you have this serial abuser. He has hurt many, many children. And then it gets more and more complex. So one of the things that we learn in the docuseries is that the grandfather was sexually abusive to Amanda's sister. And as we dive deeper and deeper, Amanda starts to ask questions about how known the grandfather's abuse is. She starts to document that, talks to different family members about what's known, and starts to ask her mother questions like, you knew this, like you knew something was not right about him, and you kept putting my sister and I in positions where we would be alone with him. Why? Why did you do that? I think that is some of the most beautiful, some of the hardest. I found I was sobbing as a person where a lot of my role in my family is try to say like, hey, can we tell a story that is true about what is happening? Can we bring into the light? And her really trying to move towards that and really trying to say, so like, what happened there, mom? Like, what happened that you knew about this? You can really see that the whole family dynamic is dependent on not bringing into the light the true dynamics of the abuse, this true scale. The mother, she doesn't identify as being a survivor of sexual abuse from her father, but she talks a lot of situations that she describes as creepy or inappropriate. She talks about a time where he was in the bathtub with her when she was quite young and just like that was off is how she describes it. So there's all these trails of stories that you never move fully into and what it takes for people to really turn and face his behavior, who is complicit about it, his wife and grandmother and the mom's mom, how she knew about that. They go a little bit into just how, what her role is in complicity with her husband. And so, yeah, there's a lot of things that happen there, but that's the high level summary. Curious, Tajmika, as you were watching it, what's sitting with you?
When I first started watching this show, the first thing that really hit me in my chest was hearing her grandfather talk about the abuse that he did to many children, because there was that initial case and there was the abuse that happened within their own family, but he was someone who worked in a chiropractor's office and had access to lots of children, did lots of harm. Hearing him talk about it, as you mentioned, as a relationship that was not just a relationship, but that was initiated by young children, was really hard to listen to. I think what makes it hard to listen to as someone who is a survivor is that it rings true to my understanding of what lots of people who perpetrate child sexual abuse, the stories they tell themselves about what is happening versus what's real. And that was really hard for me to listen to. It was hard to watch. And I really related to the moments in the film where you can see that they are prepping to go in and do something really, really hard. And they're like shaking and they're trying to breathe. You can feel the tension that's happening before they even walk into the room, before they have that phone call, before they do the thing. I imagine that's probably not the most profound moment in the movie for most people. It's really hard to communicate to people what is happening in my body when I'm about to do something that is related to the harm that I experienced in my past. All of that energy and stress and strain, even in the position of safety that I find myself in, it can be so intense. And I really feel like they did such a beautiful job of not cutting that out. It was very in the moment and I could feel it. I could feel the tension. The way that they showed family videos and photos from that time period, including the sister who was pulling out her hair. She was so stressed as a child that was being abused that there's visual evidence in front of everyone that this child is suffering. In my own family, one of the things that was said was that people sort of knew that my father had some kind of problem. They weren't necessarily able to address it in the way that meant change, transformation, healing, what have you. And so when I think about the questions that I've had, the questions that I have asked, and what it came down to in my family when I said, hey, I really wanted, not from a place of blame and shame and guilt, but I just really wanted to understand. I think a lot of survivors do. When you are a child who is harmed in your own home, you want to know what the fuck is going on around here. How did this happen? How was I a child in a home where people loved me truly? And I was harmed so terribly and so consistently for a long period of time. And that people knew before I even got here that something was amiss. When I asked my family, a couple things happened. One was that, like many Black women do, they took responsibility and accountability for creating an environment where men just didn't have as much access to the children. And that was the path towards keeping us all safe. But it was not a direct, these men just shouldn't be here. And there's probably a million different reasons why. I'm not going to go down the path of trying to explore all the different reasons why that was the situation that we found ourselves in. But I will say that as people who have a history of enslavement and trauma, and a lot of that trauma involves sexual violence, not just against women, but against men, against anyone, right? That we didn't have the ability generationally to call for help when sexual violence was happening, which means I feel like I understand my family's response because we had to be responsible for ourselves. We couldn't call for help because the consequences for calling for help, like, it continues to be a problem. It continues to be a problem for our community. I remember just being like, one, no, what people knew and how they responded was not enough to keep me safe. But it was the best they could do at the time. It's the best that they could do based on their understanding of what their responsibility was and how they were able to hold it. And it was really hard. Those are hard conversations to have. You know, you said you were sobbing when you were watching that part, and I'm feeling really emotional just thinking about it. But you start to really get this picture of how vulnerable you are or were as a child. I'm so grateful that my family has been willing to have conversations with me at all, because this is really hard stuff to talk about, and a lot of families won't talk about it at all. I feel really grateful about that. And it's so hard to feel any sense of satisfaction about those answers. There is no satisfactory answer because it happened. No matter what happened or why and who did what, I was abused. I was harmed. Watching this movie felt like that. Like, it wasn't satisfying. It didn't feel good to know that she was able to have these conversations. The answers didn't feel good. It didn't feel complete at the end. You know, there wasn't like some big, like, everybody's happy now. While it didn't feel complete or satisfying, it felt really brave though. You know, you said in season one time that, like, we have to widen the door. We have to widen the gate. We need more people. It's part of the reason we do this podcast and talk about TJ and abolition. It's like, we need more people to have an understanding of these things. I feel the same way about child sexual abuse, is if we're not actually engaging with the people who are causing the harm and the people who are around that person who in some way either enabled, allowed, didn't protect, wasn't aware, you name it. Like, if we're not engaging with those folks, we actually don't know what happened. We don't know what happened. We don't know why. And I just feel like if we're ever going to actually end child sexual abuse, there's lots of things that needs to happen. But one of the things that needs to happen is conversations like this. Because when you talk to a man who says that he was in a relationship with a 9-year-old, it becomes pretty fucking clear that that shit's not okay. It's harder to deny what's happening when you're like eyeball to eyeball with someone who is violent and abusive and saying it casually, including the part where he's like, well, yeah, God forgives me. Of course he does. All I had to do was ask for forgiveness. So there's also like this religious dogma part to it. I just feel like we have to explore it. And that means that we have to understand what it feels like to be in those rooms and have a way to be with one another when we are having these really devastating conversations that really bring into sharp relief how little we care about what happens to children.
One of my big takeaways is really similar. Like you mentioned, he was a chiropractor. The grandfather abused young girls through his chiropractic practice. And one of the things they do in the documentary is they reach out to a bunch of folks who he may have abused through his chiropractic practice. They get some folks who reach back out and are willing to engage and to talk with Amanda. One of the things that's so clear to me as someone who's an anti-violence advocate is that she's not an anti-violence advocate. She's not a person who's experienced talking about sexual violence. This isn't a thing she's done for her whole life. She is just trying to shine the light on a dynamic in her family that she's learning about as she's doing it. So it's not like she's an anti-violence expert coming in with a bunch of practice. And you can see these moments where, you know, they take one of the women who is now an adult, he had abused 40 years ago, back to the chiropractic clinic. They have a conversation with his old partner. One of the takeaways is that they fumble through it. Amanda fumbles through it in some ways. She says she doesn't know how much she should talk to people, what to turn towards. She doesn't know if she's hurting people by having these conversations. One of the things I say to folks a lot is that part of what's going to change the culture that leads to child sexual abuse is that we have to turn and face it. We have to shine the light on what's happening. And I would prefer folks do that in this stumbling, imperfect way than to feel like you have to be an expert. Because what happens is that people tell me, well, I'm not an expert. I'm not an expert on child sexual abuse, so I can't talk about it. I'm like, well, does any human you know experience it? You just have to talk about that. You just have to talk about your own role in the world and where you're standing. And I think this does that so well that I think it's a slight spoiler, but I don't know if it is, but there's some attempts of accountability that ultimately there is not some magical accountability moment where he deeply accounts for the harm he's done. That's not this story. And what it does do is that she brings into the light 80 years of family secrets that had been unspoken about. And that matters. That's actually a really important base condition to get where we need to go. You can't do the deep accountability work without it being known, without being seen. And that I think there could be a place where it seemed like that's like falling short because there's not some magical reconciliation in the end. And I think it matters that Amanda was where she was. And she said, with the skills I have, I'm going to try and turn them face this. And very brave, like you said, to have it be so raw in real time while she's figuring out her own feeling, what her relationship with her mother, her relationship with her sister, and how messy that is. And I think those are really important base conditions. It's powerful just in her attempt to say, it matters that this story is told, even if it's imperfect. And that is so beautiful to me.
I agree. And I think about her conversation with her mother was also really hard for me to watch. Now, my mother did not have the same knowledge that her mother did at all. But I know that my mother carries a lot of guilt. It can be really challenging. You know, it can be challenging as someone who is also a mother, who has three children, who have experiences that I'm just not always aware of. I think about how, even though there are things that I can see that I wish people would have taken responsibility for or noticed or done something different, I also have to sit in the reality as someone who is a mother now that my children are having a human experience that doesn't always involve things that I am going to perceive, know, understand. I'm limited in my understanding, which also gives me a lot of grace for my mother. You know, like for all the people in my family, because I'm like, oh, now that I have this reality of there are humans that live outside of my body that I am responsible for in a way that in this country is really kind of toxic. As a mother, I take so much risk. Like, I'm the person. If they do anything, it's my fault. I probably didn't nurse them long enough, or I nursed them too long. Who knows? Didn't, you know, like, it's like
yep, yeah. Exactly.
But whatever it is, it's going to be my fault. So I can only imagine what it felt like as a mother who is a survivor, who experienced abuse, who knew that that abuse was likely going to happen, and for some reason trusted that her mother was going to protect her child, even though she wasn't. Like, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense. And I know that when you're abused, there's a lot of stuff that don't make sense. Like, you make choices based on information that isn't real because you've been raised and cultured into those choices. And I really hope that her mother is seeking support, healing, therapy. Because if I feel guilt as a mother for things I don't even know about, you know, people say that's a default setting for I try not to feel guilty all the time, but it's really easy. These are your people. I can only imagine what it felt like for her to get those questions. And I'm not in any way saying that those questions were not waiting for her. She should be asked those questions. Oof, but man, my heart broke so bad for both of them. Watching Amanda try so hard to have this conversation with her mother in a way that was recognizing the wholeness of the situation. And she was so loving of course, what we can see, but I feel, again, like to your point, I feel like they didn't really hide a lot from us. It was so loving, so careful, so gracious. As a person who maybe isn't an expert in child sexual abuse, I think it's really important to notice that actually she didn't need to be an expert in child sexual abuse. What she actually needed was to be loving, was to understand that things are more complex than what she can see, to treat people with kindness and empathy. The way that she was comforting people that she was interviewing and was really careful. People can be asked the wrong question with care and be okay. You can sense that they're not trying to hurt you. It's not that you need to be an expert in child sexual abuse. You do have to attempt to have a sense of openness and understanding that there's more happening than what happened to you. And that's the hard thing about abuse, is that it did happen to me. And while I was a major pain point, right? Like the things that happened to me were terrible. There were other things that were happening to other people at the same time that caused a lot of confusion and manipulation and all those things that I can see why it happened. I can see why it happened. If people are looking for, as you said, a model for how to have the conversation, not in a perfect way, but in a brave way that is attempting something really difficult with a lot of care and love and thoughtfulness. I mean, that was what felt so hopeful to me about that movie. It was so emotional, but it's rich with possibility.
Hi, everyone. This is Tajmika. Thank you for listening to this bonus episode of the Popaganda Podcast. How are you doing? Great Photo, Lovely Life was hard for us to watch, and the conversation we just had, while beautiful and intimate, brought up a lot of painful memories and questions that may never be answered. So before we move on with our day, I want to ask you what my co-director, Tara Scott Miller, often asks me. How do you plan to care for yourself after this? If how you feel right now requires the support of a professional, we encourage you to contact them now. If you do not already have an established relationship with the kind of professional you need, ask your loved ones or the community organizations in your area for referrals to trusted healing practitioners. You can also call the National Sexual Assault Hotline at 1-800-656-HOPE. That's 1-800-656-4673. Or use their live chat at rain.org. That's rainn.org. Visit our show notes for national mental health resources like Therapy for Black Girls, the Queer Trans Therapist of Color Network, or Megan Thee Stallion's Bad Bitches Have Bad Days Too. I think I'm going to go walk my dog and maybe grab a snack and drink some water. And then I'm going to take a nap. Thank you for listening to the Popaganda Podcast. Come for the pop culture. Stay for the abolition.
To support Popaganda, please like, subscribe, and leave a 5-star review. It really makes a difference.